Gamertag Radio presents E3 coverage. Hosts Danny Pena, Paris Lilly, and Peter Toledo are direct from the convention center floor.
All right, E3 2019, and we're here checking out the Sega booth. And look, I'm an old school guy, man. I love checking out the old school games. And we have the Sega Genesis Mini, right?
That is correct,
and we
yes.
have the producer. What's your name?
My name's Damian Magakis. I had the honor and pleasure of working as the localization producer on the Genesis Mini.
All right, so...
Mega Drive Mini for our fans Europe and Japan.
Let's definitely talk about this, man, because there's a lot of games. Now, how hard was it to pick the right games for this?
It's a very challenging process, of course. There's a huge library of titles, and at the end of the day, we're really excited with the ones that we were able to include. We're looking at 42 total games present on the Mini, which is more than any of the other Mini consoles out there. And we're very happy with the diversity of titles. You have everything from your classics like Sonic 1, Altered Beast, Streets of Rage 2, which I know we'll probably be talking about.
Yes.
To some really rare titles like Mega Man. Wily Wars, which was never released in physical form, had a weird download through Sega Channel. It's a whole story on that.
Yes, yes.
Which is included here. Tetris and Darius were basically included, it developed largely for the Mini specifically. I never saw release over here as well. So hopefully it's got something for everybody.
It's good. And there was also certain games that maybe at that time wasn't that big.
Yes.
But, okay, so why was it important to add those games into the system?
That's a great question. I look at this product as having a lot of different layers to it. One, of course, is for people who are collectors. They like the Mini consoles. They look cool on your shelf. It's fun to farm up once in a while, play a couple of your favorite games, and they're going to love this. It's a meticulously detailed replica of the original Genesis. It's got long cables for the controllers. It's great for those people. It also is for people, of course, who want to go back and revisit all their favorite games. You grew up with it. And so for those people, the classics are going to be there. They're going to want to relive those experiences. But the other group is kind of what you're speaking to there about putting in games that maybe didn't get that much play or that much coverage when they were released. Like we have Alicia Dragoon on here, for example. That's not a game a lot of people are that familiar with. And so trying to get these out in this form is almost a chance to introduce people to cool new content they might not have been aware of that are still really high-quality titles from that era, and also almost an archival element to it. M2, the developers, kind of the gold standard in emulation, they're dedicated, passionate when it comes
creating these
ports of titles, and it's very close to their heart. I could talk for hours about M2 because I work with them on the Sega Ages project as well for the Switch.
Yeah.
And they're just fascinating. But it's one of those things where you see the level of commitment they have to maintaining these titles so that years to come, people will be able to still enjoy those experiences, and including those lesser known titles is a big part of that.
See, I did my little research.
Uh-huh.
Tetris is a very interesting story on that
one.
For those that don't know, you can tell them the situation, what happened with Tetris at that time, and why it's available in this.
Yes. I might not even be the best person to tell the whole story.
Okay.
It appears to be a very multi-layered tale concerning the history of Tetris. Those who do know the game, especially from the 8-bit, 60-bit era, I probably remember that it had some legal issues surrounding its trademark and the game itself. And so you saw things back and forth with Nintendo and Tengen, famously, with early cartridges. And Sega had the rights to Tetris in arcades, at least in Japan. I can't speak too much about the global situation at the time.
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of legalese in here that's beyond me, to be honest.
Yes.
But it was a situation where there were some issues that arose there. And so we had released it in Japan on the arcade, where it had been very successful. And though there had been thought of bringing that to a home console, it seemed as though that was not feasible for whatever reasons that came up then.
Yeah.
And so though there exist, people probably, listeners may be aware of this, there are these legendary cars that will pop up on eBay every so often. Famously,
very rare.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Famously, somebody tried to get like $1 million for one of these. I don't think that was a buy it now that went through on eBay. But some people, you know, paid a premium for these legendary cartridges of the game. And so it was never, regardless of the action, you know, a lot of that's kind of lost to the mists of history as to what really went on there. But the game was never released over here. And so when they were looking at titles to add here, that was one that came up for discussion as something really unique, interesting part of Sega history.
And it's an iconic game.
It is. Yeah. It totally is. When you think back to, like, for myself, like, I grew up playing 8-bit, 16-bit era games. And, yeah, you sit on your couch. You don't necessarily associate it with Genesis because of those things that did occur. Mm-hmm. But it's a game that's very much wrapped up in that era of gaming. And it's a neat little artifact from our own history as a Sega. And so being able to include that as a bonus title was something we were really excited about. And people so far here at E3 have really enjoyed it.
Yeah. About Sonic. There's so many Sonic games.
Yeah.
Why? I know there's probably going to be fans like, oh, why this game is not there?
Yeah.
How difficult is that, man, to have that conversation with your team? Like, look, we have to put this one because this is iconic. But there's probably maybe debates behind the scenes on certain games. Like, look, I know it's a good game, but we can't put too much Sonic. We have to have space for other games too. So how was the process of that?
I can't speak too much to the details of that particular process. Yeah. There were a lot of decisions made concerning that for myriad factors, really.
Yeah.
But I can certainly speak to the general thought there that it is challenging. I mean, here like at Sega, I was discussing M2 a moment ago. The developers, they're people that are just passionate about games, and that's true not only of the developers. It's true of people at Sega America and localization and marketing and PR. We all love these games. And so absolutely, like, everybody's like, this game, that game, we have our favorite games. Some of them are really niche.
Yeah.
And so it, absolutely, it's discussions we have. But at the end of the day, again, to come back to that, but we had to try to think of games that would fit in well with an overall well-rounded lineup that the fans would enjoy. And we're very happy with how it turned out.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to talk about one of my favorite games in the series from Sega Genesis, Streets of Rage. Streets of Rage.
Oh, boy.
1, 2, and 3.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy you guys added that, man, because to me, it has one of the best soundtrack of any game from that time.
Yeah.
Still to this day, I also have like a playlist on that.
Yeah.
I just truly love
it's
it.
Like, I'll put it on like in the gym sometimes when I need to get hype.
Yeah.
Like when you hear that bum 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 level one, you're like, oh, it's on. Like you know, like I'm gonna judo chop some people.
Yes.
I'm gonna jump kick them through a trash can. I'm gonna eat a roasted turkey out of that trash can.
I feel like that game, the soundtrack was ahead of its time.
Oh, it totally was.
For something that was out for the Sega Genesis in the 90s.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And like a lot of people in music today will tell you, like, they were hugely influenced by Yuzo Koshiro, who was the composer of that soundtrack. Worked on Streets of Rage series, worked on Beyond Oasis, Etrian Odyssey series for Atlas as well.
Yeah.
So I'm an unabashed fan of Yuzo Koshiro and everything he does. His soundtracks are so iconic, and they were produced so well that they hold up perfectly. Like I said, you could put him on a mix right now and be like, that's...
Didn't he work on a soundtrack? Like, I think the menu system on this.
Yes.
He tweeted that.
Yeah.
Well, I do my research, folks.
You do. indeed.
So that was cool.
No one say otherwise.
Bringing back a legend
that
worked on the Streets of Rage soundtrack to work on this. So how was that?
Amazing. When I first got the news that we were going to be able to have Koshiro-san come back to create new tracks for the Mini, I was floored. I was like, this is unbelievable. And it's like something you want to like shout from a mountaintop right away. So it's great. Like, I would, when we were doing testing and things like that, I would just leave it on the menu, just that music looping in the background.
So there's only like one track or this?
There are three tracks that you put together for the menu. Yeah. And they're awesome. I think you're going to love them.
So my last question.
Sure.
I noticed there's a little bit change with the controller.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Why this look? I mean, it still has the old school feeling of the of the original controller, but I noticed there was a couple of changes, like maybe the back part of the controller is more flat, so you can put it down. Because I think at that time it was more like it was more thick than now, right? So
I really don't know whether or not like what specific alterations were made to the overall controller.
It looks a lot smoother though, like a lot nice, like it looks like now 2019 type controller.
But it does look pretty sleek. And as far as how it plays, it controls. Feels just like having the old Genesis back in your hands from when you were a kid. So we're pretty happy with the control as well.
What are the features we could see once I connect it to the TV?
Sure.
Like the options that I have, if I could personalize like my background, like what type of things we're going to
see? Yeah. So they added in a few different options. You can play in multiple languages for one, like as far as the UI that's set up in, I believe, about 8 different languages. Oh, that's really cool for people. They also have a wide, like a full screen version, or the like normal 4:3 ratio, which you can put the game in. You can toss a CRT filter on there if you like, on either one. Yeah. Give it that old school feel. You can alternatively, especially if you go to the 4:3 ratio, you have these wallpapers you can set.
Yeah.
There's several of those you can choose from. So there's a couple different ways you can customize the way the game will look when you're playing it and try to make it best suit your experience and your memories of playing with the system.
That's cool, man. Now, there's going to be a whole new generation never played this, never got to play Sega Genesis. My last question, why they should give this a chance and check it out?
Oh, it's a great question, and there's so many answers, though.
Yeah.
For new players coming into this without having any knowledge of that era of Sega, of Genesis, the turnout, the response we've had, we see a lot of people coming through here at E3 who are playing these games for the first time. And it's a testament to the quality of these games on every level, like you mentioned earlier, the music, the graphics, the gameplay. These things hold up so well that gamers today could jump back into these and not only appreciate them for the history and what they brought to the industry, but they're just fun. Like the second you get a controller in someone's hand and they're playing Golden Axe with their friend, or they're running around with Sonic through some loops at Green Hill Zone, or you know, they're flying around in Fantasy Zone, they're jumping around in Earthworm Jim.
Like, classic.
These experiences are so timeless, and a lot of the art, like the pixel art, which is obviously making a huge comeback in so many indie games and things today, it just fits right in, which is so amazing. Yeah. The 60-bit era, it doesn't feel dated. The graphics, because of this resurgence of that really high quality pixel art and the sprite work and the graphics today, these games look fantastic. The level design, the character designs, like they're iconic. I think even people coming to this for the first time, maybe even more so, for $79.99 come September, they can pick up 42 of these games.
That's a lot of games. Yeah. We'll be here for a long time.
Yeah, and I really do think whether you're an older fan who's returning, you know, to the glory days of the 60-bit era, arguing with your friends about Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, or you're just someone coming to these for the first time who just loves awesome experiences, role-play games, fighting games, action games, you're going to be really excited with what you get. Cool.
Well, but thanks for the interview, man. It was a lot of fun. I can't wait.
I appreciate it. It's great talking with you.
Yeah, cool.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.